I realized how far I had strayed from my first purpose. How are you supposed to figure out what you don't know about you? And if the project does not invigorate you, you will not last. You don't need every client. I had no idea I was an athlete.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman, and I'm so glad to be here with you again today. And we've got somebody who's got an interesting story and some lessons to share with us. I've already enjoyed talking with her before recording this, doing some of our icebreaker questions, and so I'm really glad to bring her onto the full episode here. Jane, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. And yeah, those icebreaker questions were fun. Thank you.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I always enjoy that because it's, I think people come onto the show and they're like prepared to give you the hard lessons. And it's like, wait, let's talk about some other easy stuff first. It just gets the brain going. But Jane, I should have introduced you with your full name, Jane Monroe, and you're with Embrace the Grape. I'll let you tell people about what that is. But you reached out and you've got a few lessons to share. But before we go into lessons, And we already talked about the artwork on your wall. I don't know why I'm bringing it up again other than I just am really intrigued by it. So go back and listen to the icebreaker questions if you want to hear a little bit about that. But Jane, tell us what got you started down the path that you're on.
The path to entrepreneurship, I think, Jeff, I've always been an entrepreneur at heart. Even when I was a kid, I waited tables for a while and did some other things. And I always thought, if I owned this restaurant, how would I change it? And there's not been anywhere that I worked as an employee that I didn't contemplate, how would I change it if I owned it? So I was fortunate enough to be a stay-at-home mom for some time, about 8 years, and it was terrific. Mm-hmm. And I knew I would eventually go back to work, not really because I wanted to, but because I wanted to provide the option of a college education without debt to my kids. Mm-hmm. And I knew that it would be something would come along, and I wasn't in any hurry to do it. And actually the something that came along probably 2 years earlier than I would have wanted, but it was the opportunity to own a liquor store, and I knew nothing about owning a liquor store. And so I thought it looked like a great idea. It's a franchise here in Kansas City. Okay. And so I owned 51%, so we could be a woman-owned business.
Yeah.
And off I went into entrepreneurship and learned that I knew really less than nothing about it. Even though I have a business degree, I had no idea what I was doing. And so I got mentors quickly to help me out. And one mentor was the owner of the franchise. And, you know, they say you shouldn't take advice from somebody who doesn't have a vested interest in your company.
Okay.
And I don't really think I agree with that by and large, but I thought to myself, okay, this guy is going to actually give me industry secrets because he has a vested interest in my company.
Yeah.
And he did, and he was terrific. And then we spun off a catering company, which is beverage only. There's no food involved here. About 3 or 4 years into my experience of owning the liquor store. And then we split. My partner and I split the store and the catering company, and I kept catering and he kept the store, and I have been a solo entrepreneur, 100% owner ever since. And I love making all the decisions and reaping the rewards and the consequences when they're not good decisions.
Yeah, they're both there. Hey, yeah. I want to go back. What you said about being a server really intrigues me, because I don't think everybody does that. And not everybody goes into a job and says, you know, If I were running this business, I might do it this way. A lot of people go into jobs and they say, I hate this, I hate that, why do we do that? But they don't say, I wonder if there's a better way to do this, or I think there's a better way to do this. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a unique thing that you and other, you know, true entrepreneurs kind of ponder?
I've always been a cup half full kind of girl. And I think it's real easy to complain about circumstances that you don't like. Which there's no time in life that you can't point to something that you don't like. But I think for me, the cup half full kind of girl said, not, let's complain about the schedule and how it's done, but instead contemplate, Jane, if you were doing the schedule, how would you put it together? How would you prioritize who's working and when? How would you assess the dynamic of this person and that person and how well they do or don't work together? I guess I just got lost in my own thought about how I would or could do it more effectively than it was being done.
You know, I ask because I can relate to that. I had my own practice for a while, helping people get patents on their inventions, right? And then I went in-house because I had this whole plan to go be an in-house attorney, a general counsel, work with companies who've raised lots of money. And I went in-house and I had a great time. But when I went in-house, I got into that mode again where I was like, you know what? There's a better way to do this. The way I did it was the way I was taught by other attorneys. I got re-excited, I guess, about going out and figure out how to run a business differently and better than what I had seen in the past. So here I am. But I think you skipped over something that I read in your bio and I'm curious about. Where does DJing fit into this?
Oh, man. Yeah, so I was a disc jockey, a mobile disc jockey. So the crazy thing is, I have this theory that everything you do in your life leads you up to today. And some things just are happenstance fortunate, and being a DJ was one of those things. So I would say that I learned all my people skills. Well, I got a really good start on my people skills waiting tables because there's money at the end of that people skill capability. Then I parlayed that people skill into learning how to entertain crowds of people I don't know for 4 hours at some random person's wedding. And in the process of that, I watched, it was another company that I was like, yeah, if I own this company, how would I do it differently? But it was a big disc jockey company in the northern Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa. And they were expanding and growing. And after I finished college, I went and worked in their office and I learned their operations and I learned their sales. And I watched the CEO manage expansion, manage cash flow difficulties that you get when you expand. Yeah. And so I started my adult life when I was 19 in the events industry as a disc jockey. Who knew I would leave that job finally to go and have kids? And 10 years later, I would find myself right back in the events industry, but this time behind the bar instead of behind the DJ stand. So the connection here is so great because as I've grown my company, I have many times thought to myself, what would Rick have done? Rick was the CEO of this DJ company. What if Rick were sitting here, what would Rick do? And then I kind of do whatever I think Rick might do. And that sounds so simplistic, but it has guided me. And he doesn't even know it. Like, I haven't seen that man since 1998, probably.
Yeah.
He has no idea the effect he's had on my life. So I will say, for an event, I will argue that the two most important parts of after the wedding's over and whatever, the DJ and the bar. Because if the DJ can't entertain the crowd, it's not a great party. And if the bar doesn't know how to manage the alcohol consumption or help people manage their alcohol consumption, then things get out of hand. So I find it fascinating that I am in the second half of the best part of the events industry. And I learned so much when I was 19 to 27 years old.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So you didn't start your own business. You went out and got a job and worked for somebody else, but you leveraged it. Like, not everybody gets to work with the boss, right? How did that happen?
You mean like right now when people work with the boss?
Well, I just mean when you worked with Rick, right?
Oh.
You just happened to get hired in, or was there something that he saw in you and said, hey, I want Jane to work in my office closer to the headquarters or whatever than...
Well, let me back up to how I got the job as a disc jockey before I got to the office. I got a speeding ticket in college on spring break and I didn't have any money. And it was in my opinion, my father's fault that I was speeding down the highway because we were late going somewhere and he was the one that was late. And so I was cruising down the highway. Like, I don't know how fast.
Was he in the car with you?
I sure did. And I tried to give my dad that speeding ticket and say, you know, you're the reason we're late. You're going to pay this. And he's like, no.
Was your dad in the car with you?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
yeah. But we were late leaving the house because he was not ready. And so we were going to a concert, and you know, at concerts, it was a symphony concert. And if you don't get your body in a chair, when the conductor takes the stage, they close the doors on you.
Right. So, and it's wild to get in.
Yeah. So I just answered this ad in my college school newspaper to be a disc jockey. I knew nothing about it, but I knew that I had 6 weeks to get a job and a paycheck, and I was out of money. And so I jumped through a whole bunch of hoops, and I talk more about this in a keynote that I do, but I ended up making something out of that job when those guys expected me to not survive.
Oh.
So then I had been working there for 3, 4, 5 years, and maybe let's say 4 years through college. And then when I graduated from college, it was just a natural movement because I knew the business so well. By then I had helped to write a manual because I was the first female disc jockey who actually stuck in the company. And so I helped to write the part of the manual addressed to women about what women need to pay attention to when they're out and about. Because sometimes, I mean, bar time was 2:30 in the morning in Wisconsin. So we'd close off the DJ stand at 2 a.m. and we're not home until the sun rises. So how do you, as a woman, what precautions do you need to take? So,
so
I just kind of slotted in over time. They just knew I was the right one. And they paid me almost nothing. But for some reason, I knew that it was an important launch pad for later.
How interesting. And it's so interesting that you've connected that with your career now that you've been.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to touch on the break that you had because, you know, my wife was a stay-at-home wife, mom for a long time, probably 17 years, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And she eventually said, I'm going to go back into work. She wanted something to do. She thought that the lifestyle of spa days every day would be awesome. And she does enjoy a spa day, but she really finds some fulfillment doing this other thing. How did your stay-at-home mom years and experience add on to the server and DJing experience that you already had?
Just a quick note about our guests. I host the Breakout CEO podcast to share behind-the-scenes insights from scaling businesses. As an attorney, I see the real challenges leaders face long before success becomes public. But client stories have to stay confidential. So we invite guest CEOs to share their own moments of struggle and success. I'm so grateful to our guests and my team at Intellectual Strategies for making this show possible. Now, let's get back to the show.
When you're a stay-at-home mom with four kids and your wife, if she were sitting here, she'd be saying, "Preach it, sister."
There, yes, she would.
there are plates spinning everywhere all the time. And as the mom, you're just trying to keep the plate spinning.
Yeah.
And whether it's when they're in diapers and learning to walk and knocking stuff over, or they start to have a social life and they want to do birthday parties and they've got school projects and they don't tell you that they've got a school project due tomorrow until 4:30 in the afternoon the day before. And you got to go off and get all the things, you know, it's just plate spinning and it's exhausting. And yet it is so much fun. You get all the goods from your kids. You get to read the books and roll down the hill and bounce on the trampoline and, you know, but it's grueling work being a mom. Yeah,
definitely.
So I guess I'm just built for grueling work.
Well, so what was the trigger then when you've done all that and you're like, you know what, I'm going to go back.
Yeah.
I want to go buy. Yeah, I mean, did you jump right in and buy the company at that point?
No, I knew this store was opening, this franchise was opening, and I knew one of the guys who was going to run the store, and he told me about it. And I had a kid and, you know, a carry car seat. So I think like a year, 18 months. Couldn't have been a carry car seat. Anyway, it was a little kid. Yeah. And I just said, well, I can keep the books. Like, I just wanted a little something to do. Because my grandmother always said, a woman should always have her own money. Money she doesn't have to account for to anybody. And so really, this was just my way of, I could see an opportunity that I could have just a little cash for Jane.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how to keep the books. I took accounting in college, which didn't mean anything.
Wait, you offered to keep the books, but then you're like, I better figure this out?
Well, yeah, pretty much. So what I meant was I know how to balance a checkbook because I paid the bills at home. Yeah. But I didn't know about receivables and payables and payroll and taxes and employees and I didn't know that. And so they just handed me a computer with a QuickBooks program in it and a stack of beginning invoices and said, get started. And I was like, oh no.
Wait a second, what have I done?
I guess I can't ask for help because they think I know how to do this. So I figured it out along the way. And then it was about 3 or 4 months in, the guy, the partner with the money came to me and said, hey, I want you to give me a projection about the first quarter of next year. How much money are we going to need? How do I need to fund the company to the store to keep it going? And I had never put a projection together before, but I did that too. And gave him a number. And then I said, you know, how are you planning to fund this? And he said, well, I'd really like to take another partner. And So we kind of talked through that. And I went to, this is 2005, when if you had a pulse and could breathe, the bank would write you any size check you wanted.
Yes.
Yeah. And so they did that. And so there I am. Now I'm a liquor store owner. Congratulations. And 6 figures in debt and, you know, a good 6 figures. And So then I began to spend more and more time at the store because truly, Jeff, I loved it. Yeah. I loved knowing what people drank. I loved pointing them to the next new thing that I thought they would love. I loved helping people find gifts for other customers because I knew what those customers drank. I really enjoyed all of it. And then we spun off this catering company. So now, and along the way, the guy who knows how to run a liquor store, we've had to move on because he was not ethical. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm running a liquor store, which again—
So this was like your manager or the general manager of the store. You said, hey, this isn't working. We don't do that here. We'll see you later.
He had to go. There were some legal issues and we had to move him along.
Yeah.
So then now I'm running the store and I'm running catering and both are growing and I am now actively losing track of my children. The oldest is 15 and the youngest is 8. Yeah. And I mean, there's cross country meets. I'm struggling to get to and my 8-year-old is sick and I got to go get them from school, but nobody else is at the store. Like it just, Jeff, I just couldn't anymore. So I went to my remaining partner who is the money guy. And I said, listen, I got a problem. I'm losing track of my kids and I need to rework how we do this. And so he paid more attention to the store. He still had a corporate job at the time, which is why he was the money guy. Let's be clear.
He was the semi-absentee owner of sorts.
He was.
Got it.
And then he had an idea about what to do with how to manage the first quarter of an upcoming year that I didn't agree with financially. And I kind of put my foot down and said, you know, if it's your money. And if you want to do that, I can't stop you. But if you choose to do that, mm-hmm. I'm out. I'm not going to stand by and let you do that.
Okay.
So I went home that night and I was sitting on my 15-year-old's bed and I was just talking to her about the day and what had happened. And I said, you know, Melody, I think I might have to leave the store. What do you think of that?
And now, pause real quick. Sorry. Is Melody the one that did the artwork behind you?
Yeah.
Okay. So we know a little bit about Melody.
Yeah. She's such a sweet and tender heart. And said, I might have to leave the store. And she looked at me with this tiny glimmer of hope in her eyes that only a 15-year-old can try to hide. And she said, really, Mom? Would you actually do that?
You could see in her eyes. She was like, this is a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in that moment, I realized how far I had strayed from my first purpose, which was parenting those children. And I had allowed myself to get distracted and excited and thoroughly out of place, putting two companies before my children. And so when my business partner went and did that financial thing, it was easy for me to say, okay, let's split it up. What are we doing? And he kept the store and I kept catering. And now with a catering company, if my kid is sick, I just close my laptop and I take it home with me. Get the kid from school, take the laptop and the kid home and we watch Blue's Clues and we nap together and we read books together. And then I can work that night. I don't have to work during the day. It worked perfectly.
Were the two businesses separate enough that it was an easy split? Because sometimes in these small business worlds, they're very, very intertwined, right? We call them two businesses, and yet Mm-hmm. And yet there's a lot of, you know, intercompany borrowing, and you're splitting the, you know, the staffing essentially. Or was it a cleaner, cleaner way to break it?
It was relatively clean because it's the liquor industry. And so each company had to have its own set of licenses, and you have to act in a certain way under each kind of license. So essentially my partner kept the retail license and I kept the catering license and all the peripheral things that went with each. Now we were legally allowed to share inventory at the time, and we did do that. So there was some inventory I took from the store when I moved the catering company out of the store, but all of that, it was a very amicable split, and all of that was just a conversation with my partner.
Just a matter of, you take this, I'll take this.
Yeah.
Got it.
So it was really like a professional divorce. And what do we do with the kids? How do we split the kids up? And we went to the attorney and we split the kids up.
Well, is it common for retail liquor stores to also do catering? Or is that, I'm not totally familiar. Listen, I'm in Utah. We have a liquor store somewhere. I don't necessarily frequent it myself, but I know you have to go to a specific state-owned liquor store to buy hard liquor, and they're around somewhere. Other than that, I can't say I know much about the industry.
Yeah. You know, since Prohibition, when Prohibition ended in the 30s, the federal government said, we're going to legalize alcohol again, but we don't want anything to do with the regulation of it. So every state makes their own rules and regulations. So I have a company, a catering company in Missouri, because I'm in Kansas City, and then Kansas City also goes over into Kansas. And so I have a separate catering company in Kansas with separate licenses, separate rules, separate location, separate insurance, separate.
Got it.
Just because it's a regulated industry, and that's how I'm dictated to act.
Okay. Well, and so is it common there or in the surrounding area for?
It was not. This was sort of a crazy, we were the first beverage only catering company in the Kansas City area. There were some restaurants that catered and would do the bar as an add-on, but to do beverage only was different and niche-y.
What prompted that? If nobody was doing it, sometimes it's like, I've never seen it before, so it doesn't even cross my mind. But you guys said, I haven't seen it, but we could try it.
So the partner who we had to move along said early on, he said, let's get this store up and running, and then I want to open a catering company. And I thought that was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard of, because I'm thinking green beans and chicken breasts. I didn't grasp it. But then about 5 years in, there was a new venue that was being built very close to the store. And it was a city-run facility, and it has an event space in it. And their very first bride called me. This is the fall of 2008. I can't tell you if the market has crashed yet or if it's about to crash, but we're right in that area. And this girl called me and wanted me to price liquor for her wedding in this new event space. So I did. And then she called me a couple weeks later and she said, Jane, I can't use your liquor store for my liquor. And I'm like, why? She said, it's a city facility and they require a liquor licensed caterer to do all their alcohol work.
Okay.
And she said, I've called the people on their list and I don't afford them. I don't know what to do. There's got to be something you can do. So then I called the people on the list and got quotes for, you know, fake quotes for a wedding. And I was stunned at what they were charging. Absolutely. Like, I thought, how do you sleep at night charging money like this? Because I'm used to a retail mark, I'm not used to a catering mark. So then I came up with the bright idea that we should go ahead and do this catering company and let's split the difference between a retail mark and this catering mark, do something that's very, very affordable and see if this thing has legs. And so that's how we started, was some poor, sweet, crying bride 17 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were the quotes really high because they were really food catering businesses and they would upcharge to just come do the beverages only? Is that?
I think the quotes were really high because the options were really slim. And
market demand.
Market demand. Yeah.
Got it.
And then I came along and upset the apple cart.
And that was back in 2008, 2009.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when did you guys split the catering off from the retail store?
It was 2011, summer of 2011.
Oh, so not too long after that.
Mm-mm, not too long.
And so Embrace the Grape, was that the name of it when you guys started?
Yeah, so it was Embrace the Grape LLC was the parent company, and the DBA, there was a DBA of the liquor store under it, and then DBA, Embrace the Grape Beverage Catering.
Okay.
And so we just split. Well, I'm talking to an attorney who probably does this, you know, in his sleep. but we just, I took the Embrace the Grape LLC name, and my partner had a new LLC created for the liquor store. And Got we it. Just moved that under his new LLC, and I kept the existing tax ID number and LLC and DBA.
Yeah. All minor details that probably, if they're done right, don't really matter too much. So
yeah, it was no big deal. The attorney did it all, and we just wrote the check.
Said, all right, sounds good. And when it's amicable, that's a lot easier. So yeah. Since 2011, though, you've been growing this.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
What does that growth look like over the years?
It year over year, for the most part, especially in the beginning, we would grow 25, 35, 40% a year mm-hmm. in the beginning. And then in about 2014, I learned what the word delegation means. And because I had something, I wanted to drop off the grid for a week in the summer of 2014. And you can't just drop off the grid when you're in the events industry unless somebody is on the grid in your place.
Yeah. Yeah.
So because of that, I hired my first assistant, and I began to learn how to delegate. And from 2014, oddly enough, was the first year that I needed to start taking money from the company to pay a college expense for this girl back here. So the whole reason I went back to work was to pay for college. And about the time I could take money from the company, a kid went to college.
So it worked. Melody was the first beneficiary.
She sure was. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So then once I learned delegation and I learned how to grow my bartending team strongly. It's not really
Wait, were you run? Does this mean you were running? You were scheduling. You were booking. You were picking up the drinks. You were cleaning the glasses. You were mm-hmm. carting stuff around, and you were showing up to the event, and you were serving, and you were everything in the business.
Yeah. Now I had a team of people who bartended for me from the beginning.
Okay.
But
okay.
I bartended quite a bit just because I didn't have to pay myself. And so that was just money in the bank account.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still do a little bit today. I actually really like it. But yeah, in those early days, I was doing all that stuff. And I was also going to cross country meets, and I was taking lunch money to school, and I was picking a kid up from band practice.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah. It's nonstop. And, yeah.
But I also had the privilege of a husband who took care of our household expenses, and we lived real skinny, but we made it on what he made. And so that allowed me to continue, again, to pay attention to the kids, grow the company slowly, because we didn't need that money to put food on the table. I just wanted that money to put kids through college. Yeah. So it was a little bit of a different motivation, really.
That makes sense.
But then after 2014, 2015, amazing, 16, 17, 18, and then 2019 came, and we were off the charts success. I couldn't, like, nobody could breathe in 2019.
Really?
I had an office team. I have 25 bartenders. We're working. We're humping hard. We are just having a great time. And I remember saying to my dad, I've never seen money like this. It's so much money, Dad. And he would give me this grin, you know, this proud daddy grin.
Yeah.
And luckily he taught me that smart girls don't spend everything they make. Because who could see 2020 coming and COVID?
Which in the events industry was devastating, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I had a pile of money, and I learned that cash is king. And I took some PPP money. And kept all my people working. I hired a new full-time person on March 3rd of 2020, right before the shutdown. And yeah, and I was so confident that she was exactly who we needed that I did not mind paying her to do nothing for the next however many months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like? What was it like where you were at? Because I know some places events just shut down completely. I mean, I think everywhere they shut down completely for a time, but some reopened up much sooner than others. Was it a more lenient or strict kind of environment that you're in?
The city of Kansas City proper was strict. They were locked down for a very long time. In fact, if I remember correctly, they were locked down like through the end of November of 2020. But you get out into the suburbs, and we had this great venue we did all the work in who did outdoor weddings and could do outdoor receptions. And so they opened up, and they were off in the suburbs, and so those regulations didn't apply to them, and they opened up pretty quickly. I mean, I would say we might have done a wedding for like 20 people in June of that year. But also there's no money in a wedding for 20 people. Like, it's all the same administrative work. And there's, you know,
with less volume. Yeah.
So, but
it's, but something to keep your team busy, at least a little bit, right?
It did. And the other thing that I did to engage them was I decided to see if I wanted to expand the company to another market because, gosh, what would that be like?
During COVID?
During COVID. Mm-hmm.
You're like, hey, market's not great. Maybe we should grow.
Maybe we should grow.
Well, and I guess I could see that, right? Because you're saying, well, maybe if we're doing smaller events, we need more events. So where do we go? Maybe adjacent city. So yeah. So you added a city to.
So I ended up in St. Louis, also. Okay. And
how far is that from Kansas City?
It's about a 4-hour drive.
Oh, so it's not an hour away. Like it's a right. Just because I know I've talked to business owners who have, you know, businesses near them and businesses far away from them, and it's the further away, the more burden it becomes sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. The Amtrak goes from Kansas City to St. Louis. So that's nice because if I wanted to, and I have just gotten on the train, and then you can still work on the train and it's about 5 hours on the train and then poof, you're there. But yeah, that project also kept my team busy because I could say, I want a list of every venue within 50 square miles of city center that allows outside alcohol. And that would give them something to do. I really just wanted to keep their mind engaged in what we were doing because I didn't want them to get bored and then go get a different job because I really did believe that our team was exactly right. And here we are 6 years later and I'm right. They're still with me.
That's fantastic.
They are stellar.
As you grew this team, what were some of the maybe lessons that you kept seeing? And then you're like, wait a second, I've seen this 7 times now. Why haven't I fixed it? Or where did you see those growing moments?
What I didn't realize was happening for a very long time was it seems to be a soft landing place to be a bartender for this company if you are going through a divorce. And we got over the years, there's been probably 15 or 20 people who have come to me mid-divorce, and I didn't put all this together until I was mid-divorce and realized the pattern in this company. So
you're saying that people getting divorced from what you saw in your business often came and said, hey, I'd like to be a bartender at an events company.
Yeah, because I'm an extra job. I'm extra money. I only hire people who have a real job somewhere else. So I only hire professionals in their own right.
So this is after hours, weekend job, weekend money. Okay.
So a lot of, and women specifically, some men, but mostly women who are mid-divorce and they don't know if they can pay the car payment. They don't know if they can pay for league sports for their kids. They don't know if they can keep the house.
Yeah.
But they add something else, a little extra revenue, and all of a sudden it has created freedom for these people to maintain their lifestyle. And the other completely unintentional consequence is that, you know, I mean, you know, when your back's up against a wall, you work hard. Mm-hmm. And these people work their tails off for me. It is the bartending part, the mixing drinks and handing them over the counter. That's the easy part. What you don't see is schlepping boxes out of the warehouse into a vehicle, set up at an event, repack your vehicle at the end of the night, bring it back to the warehouse, put everything away. The hard work that goes into catering and food is the same. The actual service piece is a piece of cake. It's all the other stuff. But these people work their tails off for me. And I did not see that trend until in the middle of my own divorce several years ago, suddenly these humans gathered around me and said, well, let me tell you what you did for me during my divorce.
Really? So they had brought that up. They brought that to your attention.
Yeah. And it's a stunning realization that you don't even understand the impact that you have until somebody says something. I had no idea.
What did that switch for you? Like what were you thinking before, if anything? Maybe it wasn't even a conscious thought, but what was it before and what was it after?
Before, I just thought, okay, before I was like, why do we have so many women working in this company? Where are the men?
Yeah.
We love man muscle at the end of the night. Man, there's nothing better than a man to help you unload a truck.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're strong and we're capable, but where are the men? And that's the answer. The men were not, it was the women who were coming to me for extra money. But also, when you go through the heartbreak of a divorce that is so, for me personally, it was the bravest thing I have ever done for myself ever, was that time in my life. And to look at these other people that I had taken for granted in their heartbreak, wow, the strength of these people who work for me.
Yeah.
You know, that's because they were doing their own brave things in their own way. And I just happened to get to be part of it.
But hadn't necessarily seen it the same way until you were. You know, my wife just the other day, she was, because I have a daughter who moved into a new home in a new neighborhood, you know, an hour from here. And she, of course, I will give it to her. She is much more perceptive and observant and reflective than I am a lot of times. And she said, you know, we need to be better about welcoming our neighbors in. We have a neighbor moving in across the street in a home. She's like, we haven't done a great job with that. And I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. We could do better. She said, no, because Lauren has just moved in, you know, a month ago down in that new neighborhood. And not as many people stopped by as I thought. As I would have thought would have stopped by. And seeing your daughter go through it on the one side of it, and then simply coming home and seeing the moving van across the street, it's like, oh, we have an opportunity to do a lot better. And it makes us reflect just differently on the the situation. It sounds like something similar, maybe more, you know, I don't want to trivialize it at all, because moving and having a divorce have got to be two very separate things, but just seeing it differently, right?
Yeah. And sometimes we're just so up close and personal in a situation that we can't see the intricacies and the fine points of it. Yeah.
Did going through a divorce, and I don't want to get too personal, but I'm really curious here. Did going through a divorce in the end light a different fire in you then?
It is a different feeling to now have, especially post COVID, to have this, like, this company's got to work now. Before it was, hey, this is a great idea and I want this to work because I want to pay for college education. Now it's, you got to do the hard phone calls because you've got to.
This is the source now.
This is it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and also along the way, that team that I was speaking of before, there were many times they would see me, you know, at my desk in tears, and they'd say, "Jane, you go home. You're no good to us here. Just go home, and we don't want to see you again until tomorrow." And so I would pick up my laptop and I would wipe my tears and I would go home and work or not, and they carried me. They carried me through a really hard time.
Yeah. Wow. How big is your team now?
So there's four in the office total. Two of us are full-time, two are part-time, and there's about 25 bartenders.
Wow.
And everybody's got their, in the office, everybody's got their jobs, except for when we're overwhelmed and then all the job descriptions go out the window and we just
everybody's
get done
got
what
every
needs to
job.
Get done.
Yeah. Totally understand. How does this play into what you call the road to leadership cohesion?
Oh, gosh. This is a great question. So the road to leadership cohesion has to do with how you see yourself and how you are perceived and where there is disconnect and how to discover that disconnect and patch through it, really be more cohesive through it. And in my keynote, I talk about a framework called the Road to Inner Cohesion and or Leadership Cohesion. And it's about who do you know yourself to be that everybody else knows you to be as well, your known self? Who do you not know yourself to be, but other people know that about you? It's your blind self. Who do you not know yourself? How did I say that? Uh-oh, now I'm all wrapped up in it. Who do you know yourself to be that everybody else knows? Who do you not know yourself to be, but everybody else knows? Who do you know yourself to be, but nobody else really knows, except maybe your super close inner circle? That's your mystery self or your hidden self. And then your mystery self is who you don't know and nobody else does either. And that mystery self is really the rub. It's the rub. Like, how are you supposed to figure out what you don't know about you and nobody else does either? And that becomes a whole conversation about getting outside your comfort zone, doing things differently, doing different things, being open to not failing, but looking at every failure as the stepping stone to the next success. And then if we talk about what does leadership cohesion really mean? I look at it as being intellectually sticky, like getting my right brain and my left brain to talk to one another, because, you know, your right brain is all full of emotion and your left brain is all full of logic. And we all know people who are so centered in their left brain that they're all to-do lists and accomplishments and golly, they're so boring at dinner parties. They're just horrible, horrible to be with socially. And then we all know people who live so completely in their right brain that they're all emotion and drama and everything is highs and lows and there's no middle ground. And those people are just straight up exhausting to be around. So how do you take the right brain and the left brain and teach them to cohesively speak? And it becomes about, as you're figuring out these things, the things you don't know about yourself that other people know or that you don't know about yourself that nobody else does, and your brain begins, you begin to notice patterns of how you act and react to things. And if you can take a step back, realizing some patterns, then when you think you're going down a certain path that somebody has told you about yourself is where you tend to go, and you often don't have a successful outcome. If your right and left brain are more cohesive, then as you head down that path and your right brain tries to take over, your left brain says, hang on, right brain, hang on. Let's talk about this for a minute. And then your left brain says, just breathe, right brain, just breathe. And then you can take a step back and become a more full, complete leader. Because what you're really doing through all of this is learning to lead yourself first.
Yeah.
And then you can lead others. So that's a very Cliff's Notes version of what is an hour-long conversation.
Yeah. Where did this come from? Like, I thought you were going to talk – when most people talk about cohesion and leadership, they're talking about team, right? They're talking about interpersonal relationships and culture and those things like that, not necessarily left brain, right brain. And so that's a really intriguing thought to me. It reminds me of when I was taking a tennis lesson from a coach one time when we were in Northern California. And you know, I have an engineering background, so I might be one of those slightly boring people at the parties sometimes. But
I bet you've overcome that.
Yeah, I overcome or overcompensated. It depends on who you ask. But he said to me, hey, you know, don't overthink this. What you can do is, you know, when you're going to serve the ball, just say, every time you bounce the ball or every time the ball hits the court when you're in a rally, just say the word bounce, 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 bounce. Oh. And that's going to occupy your left brain and take the overthinking out of it. You've given the left brain a task. Now you can let your muscle memory and, you know, whatever else take over.
Feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. Get into the feeling of tennis instead of the thinking of tennis. Is that kind of related to what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that analogy. That's awesome off the cuff. Good job. Yeah.
Well, where did this come from?
So it actually comes from a sermon from a church that I've been attending forever. And it was funny because I was talking to some other people who have been in this congregation for longer than I have. And I said, do you remember that sermon about what you know about yourself that you know that everybody knows and what you don't know about yourself, but everybody else knows? And other people remember this sermon too, but I have, that has stuck with me. It's actually a framework originally called the Yohardi window. And if you Google it, it'll give you all the sciencey stuff about it. But I've taken that. It's probably been 15 years since I've heard this sermon, but I've taken that. And just along the way, I've been like, oh yeah, I didn't know that about me. Oh yeah, that falls into this category. Or here are some things I know about me that I don't talk about. And when I talk about this section, it's not about, we could go down a path of childhood trauma or, you sure. know, things that you hold shame around. But that's,
how did we get to where we are, right?
Yeah, but I am not qualified to talk about that. So what I talk about what I know about me that you don't know, are just the ways that I am, how I live my life, things I don't have to speak about because the way I show up speaks it. Mm-hmm. And so on first meeting, there's a lot of stuff that I just know about me and you don't know that. But if we spend enough time together, you'd be like, oh yeah, she's that kind of girl and she's this kind of girl. And then over time, between a relationship, a friendship between you and I, it becomes more things get put in the bucket of what I know about me and you know about me too.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, like when I started as a disc jockey, those guys didn't know I was going to make it. In fact, they did not expect me to make it because they'd hired other women before. And they went so far as to tell me in the interview, you know, we've hired other women and they don't make it. So don't be surprised when you don't either. And what they didn't know about me was that I had a speeding ticket and I had 6 weeks to get a paycheck.
Yeah,
and I didn't tell them. And they also did not know that I am a pit bull dog, tenacious.
Yeah.
When I've got to get something done, it will get done. And they didn't know that. Oh, they learned it. But so it's just those kinds of things. And as I began to put things in buckets through my life and think about them, there's a moment that I came to about 10 years ago that I looked at myself in the mirror and realized that I'm an athlete. I didn't know that about me and nobody else really did either until I took on a giant challenge, the thing I wanted to drop off the grid for a week for. I thought an athlete had to be able to throw and catch a ball. I can't throw and catch a ball. I still can't throw or catch a ball.
What was the week off the grid?
It was a canoe and kayak race down the Missouri River from Kansas City to St. Louis.
Oh, really?
340 miles. And I had to train for it. My sister and I have done it together 10 out of the last 12 years. And but from that, I had no idea I was an athlete. And then there I am. Yeah.
How does this, Jane, how does this play out in your business? I mean, is this something that you, that makes you a better leader with your team? Is this something that you share with your team and, you know, brings the culture together? It reminds me, I started a job one time at a company and the first thing they did, hey, take this personality test, the disc, right? And everybody's going to figure out what it is. We give you this little token, you put it on the corner of your desk. Someone walks into your room and they're like, oh, you're this type of communicator or this type of thinker. And that helps me to understand better how to maybe present things to you. Like, is it like that? Or how does this exhibit itself in your business?
I think it parlays into my leadership style in this amazing ability to accept people for where they are, who they are and where they are, and to give guidance in this particular capacity to be a little bit better tomorrow.
Okay.
And then to encourage people who want to get outside their comfort zone to go do something crazy. One of the gals in the office has hiked rim to rim of the Grand Canyon, I think 3 times. I mean, that's
a fantastic hike.
That's no small feat. So I think it has created in me the glass half full girl is now the ultimate encourager of all ways somebody wants to live life. Go live your life. And something that happens to me sometimes is I lose really good bartenders because they have accomplished what they wanted to accomplish working for me. And that part of their life is over.
They're so I lose ready them. To level up.
And they go live their life. And I admire every last one of them. I think that's it.
Is that because there's power in helping, in discovering things that you didn't know about people, the stuff that they knew and you didn't, or in helping them discover the things that they didn't know about themselves that maybe you did or didn't know? Is that what it is? It's just really this self-discovery, exploration kind of journey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It really is. It really is. And it's just made such an easy leadership path for me because I take that excitement of the discovery and apply it everywhere in my life.
How have you seen this impact the people that are around you?
I came to understand at a fundraiser I went to in my industry in January. There are a lot of people who know me, who know who I am, but I don't necessarily know who they are. The events industry has a lot of turnover business-wise. Not everybody makes it. I've also got this gray hair that is hard to forget. But it came to my attention, it was my aha moment, that I'm kind of a matriarch in this industry. I've been around for a long time. I'm the first in my little niche of work.
Yeah.
And people know me. And so all of a sudden at this event, it occurred to me that not only do people know me, but they like me. Now, why do they like me? They like me because I like them. Even though I don't necessarily know who you are or know your name, if you greet me, I am absolutely gonna have a conversation with you. I have coffee with my competitors. Hmm. We talk about things. That's a great place to be. And also, if that woman is rocking that skirt, I'm going to tell her. So I think that is this radical optimism and love of life that I have. And I just spill it. I just spill it. And it makes people want to work for me. It makes people want to do the hard things I ask them to do because I spill out great things.
Well, that's interesting. I'm going to have to give some more thought to this because it seems like there's some more magic in there around just, it feels like you've taken this perspective of life and relationships and self-reflection. And by using that, it's attracting people to you and around you and working well for you. So that's really interesting. What would you tell other people, like if you're sitting down with one of your competitors, like you mentioned, or somebody else who has found themselves traveling a similar journey? We talked about that a little bit earlier. What would you tell them about how to leverage this in their own either leadership role or in their own team and business?
One thing I tell people in the events industry a lot is don't be afraid to say no to that client. You don't need every client. You don't need the hard ones. You don't need Bridezilla. She's going to cost you so much in time and energy that you're not going to, your bank account does not need that money. Know that when you say no to Bridezilla, that you're going to say yes to three perfectly lovely clients who will take the same amount of time that one would have taken. And your bank account is going to love you for it. And so is your mental health. So I'm a big believer in, let the desperate clients go to the desperate vendors and leave the good ones for me.
That sounds like there's more to it than just making good business decisions. Like I to put it back into your framework, it's almost like that's a known known. This Bridezilla is a known known. Let's put the known known where it belongs, not in my business, right?
In somebody else's fear.
And and we'll just open our minds and doors to the unknown for a minute, which surely is going to be better than the known known in that case.
Yeah. And it works. And then that keeps the cohesiveness of the entire culture in my company, because I'm not asking people to work with people who are difficult. And every once in a while, yeah, we still get one. It's not a perfect science. But yeah, most of the time it just goes along. We work with good people because we are good people.
Yeah. I love that. We work with good people because we are good people. Yeah. So that sounds really simple. Right. Now we just have to implement that now.
Right.
Well, Jane, this has been fantastic. I really appreciate you taking some time and sharing your story, sharing some insights with us, and presenting a framework that I think has more depth to it. It sounds like you talk about this in some keynotes, maybe you have a book coming out someday, who knows? You know, where would somebody, if somebody wanted to read more about this, this framework, this leadership or inner cohesion, how would they do that with you?
Well, they can certainly find me on LinkedIn. My website is keynotejane.com.
Okay.
You can poke around there, and I've got a link there if you want to talk to me more about whatever. I mean, it doesn't have to be about booking me to speak. If you just want to have a quick conversation on the phone, hey, I got a question about whatever. I'm an open book for all of it. So, those are probably the two best ways to find me.
Okay. So in addition to Embrace the Grape, the catering company that you're running, you're branching into speaking.
Yeah.
So I love it. Well, you've got a good message to share. It's great that you're willing to share it. So
thanks
for coming on the show and being a part of this.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you.
It was great having you. And to our audience who's joined us again on this episode, thanks for joining us on the Breakout CEO podcast.
Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.